Blog Talk Radio.
Jesus, draw me ever near as I labor through the storm. You have called me to this passage, and I
Hello?
Yes, you live.
Hello.
Wonderful. Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Alali.
And Ida Morris in Orangeburg, South Carolina, bringing you the show tonight, live with Nathan Hill. And Dr. Alali is here to tell us about the wonderful work that she's done with a BioBalancer, and how it affects our health and our well-being, our homes, our animals, every aspect of our life. And Dr. Alali, I'm not going to take up too much time. I'm going to let you go ahead and start, because I think we may have a special guest on tonight also with you.
Oh, absolutely. We tried to bring in Elder David Lawrence Clark from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Elder Clark is a distinguished environmentalist. He has been working with churches for the last 30 years to get pulpit safety, pulpits retrofitted for safety. His concern is that a number of pastors are dying in the pulpit and having strokes. And he's been researching electromagnetic hypersensitivity and electromagnetic frequencies for more than 30 years. Elder Clark is a member and an associate minister at the Church of the Realm in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, and he's an advocate and environmental ministry for the Church of God in Christ worldwide. And I met him because his father had a stroke in the pulpit and is very good friends with Dr. Smith Yankus, and he had us to come over to Pittsburgh to evaluate the church. So he'll be joining us shortly. I know he's in a convention that's in the city, and he said he would be running pretty close to the hour, so he's trying to get on as we're speaking. I want to welcome everybody to the show tonight. After last week's show, I got a call from Atlanta, Georgia, from one of my colleagues from Columbia, and they were telling me about this amazing opportunity called Community Crowdfunding. And they were telling me about a Marine named Mark Hamill. And I got so excited that they sent me some information about how we could begin to crowdfund and get money for our clinical trials, as well as to be able to help so many families that are contacting me regarding their sick children or sick parents, and they want to get their homes retrofitted, but they don't have the resources. And so we've been strategizing about what can we do and how can we begin to bring the resources together or get the resources so we can help families to help their children. And I was so excited. I sent everybody this video on YouTube about Mark Hamill, and I sent out a number of emails to my friends just to get some feedback. And I was just totally blown away when I found out that so many of my friends are already in this crowdfunding for their nonprofit organizations. In fact, when I told Mr. Hill, he told me he got in about 2 weeks ago. He's working, he's crowdfunding through this network to be able to bring this radio show to you live, as well as support the many people that he supports across the United States. And I want to take this moment to give a shout out of thanks to him and Ida Morris for their faith in us, their belief in us, their belief in what we're doing, because every week I'm gaining more and more information about this national effort now to keep everyone balanced and to decrease the assault of chemicals and radiation in our homes. And it's just been tremendous to see. And we've kind of reached our peak because we have a number of things trying to put together funding, and we're so grateful for Longevity trying to help us push our platform through their network and selling of the NanoBio Balancer. The sales of the NanoBio Balancer helped us sustain the research and help us to diversify, because not only are people using it to balance and retrofit their electronics and use it to balance, you know, to stabilize their health, but farmers are using it for their animals. And now people have found uses for it for their hydroponic farms at home, for their home gardens. And we are getting pictures coming in from people's backyard gardens. That's just unbelievable. We have a family in San Francisco, just outside of San Francisco, that had a home garden, and they couldn't grow anything in their garden for 6 years. So this year they got their home retrofitted, and they said, well, we're going to try to see if grapes will grow in our garden, because they have a beautiful garden out back on their patio. And we bioharmonized and put a energy wave on the patio, and then they used the bio-balanced water. And when these grapes got this water, we were totally blown away at what happened. They had exponential growth in just a matter of 6 weeks. These grapes are as big as 3/4 of an inch. It's just phenomenal. And the family is just ecstatic with joy that finally, after 6 years, they have something growing in their home garden. So people have a diversity of interest. It's almost as if everybody has become a scientist when they've gotten these nanotechnologies and began to experience in areas of need where they've had difficulty growing plants or difficulty with animal health and difficulty with especially arthritis. It seems that people get such instant relief when they have joint pain and stiffness. And so it's just been tremendous, all of the testimonies that have come forth. And so I want to kind of diverse a little bit, because we have launched our own community crowdfunding. As I looked at this presentation and put out the APB on some friends and had a number of people look at it to see if they thought it was noteworthy to even put out there and to get involved. And these are some of the things I like about it. First of all, this organization has been around for 2 years. So there's some viability to it, and they've been able to work out some of the kinks in it. And number two, they've been very successful. People have been very successful in getting their projects funded. And usually when you have a crowdfund, you have a time limit. You know, they give you 30 to 60 days to be able to reach your funding goal. If you don't reach your funding goal, they return that money back to the people who were trying to help you. And that's like not helping you get out of the hole at all. What I like about this community crowdfunding presentation is that it's perpetual. Once you only have to invest $200. Once you invest $200, it's web-based, so you have your website. People can go to your website and join, and they can make their donations directly to you. And then it starts the engine in your website. So you don't even have to worry about how you're going to give back. This puts the engine in perpetual motion, and every time you get five people, it starts paying back into the people that are helping you. You start helping them. And I love it. I love what it's doing for churches and civic organizations and helping communities to be able to meet needs where they are. People are using this system to buy cars, to buy houses, to get down payments for houses, to get down payments for churches, to retire mortgages in churches, you know, to help deal with the indigent poor, to help people that would otherwise not have hope for college education, to fund their college education. And it's just been tremendous to see. So we have launched the Meechie Health Community Crowdfunding Campaign. And if you watch the video, it tells you everything about how to get involved, what to do, what to expect, how you can start your own initiative. And you can join me. I mean, I have probably three or four people that are very concerned with neighbors and family members that are sick, and they have the house has been suspect as a cause of injury, and they have partnered with me, and we have helped to raise funds. And I was just totally dumbfounded when we are celebrating our 7th year anniversary, and when we look back over the reports over the past 7 years and seen exactly how much money we have given back to the community for various projects at the Cleveland Clinic, at various churches that are around the nation, and various families. We have given in excess of $130,000 has been what we have been able to see back to the community. And so it's been tremendous to see just with the little bit of effort that we've had over 7 years. And now we're hopeful to be able to multiply that by getting in the community crowdfunding. And I just want to throw this back to you. Did you have a chance to look at any of the information?
I hadn't had time to look at those videos yet, Dr. A, but it really sounds like a great idea, a great program to be involved in. And I'm going to look at those as soon as we're off the air. I've been out of town for the last 7-8 days.
Okay.
Just getting back stateside. And I tell you, vacations are nice when you can stay in touch with everything, but then I guess that's what makes them really nice when you're not in touch with everything. But I really had a nice time.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, welcome home, I should say, because I didn't realize you were out of the country.
Yes, I was.
Okay. So, Mr. Hill, you're already in the community crowdfunding. How were you introduced to it? And what expectations or what do you hope to gain from it?
Well, I hope to move the radio show to another level. Right now I'm on, well, I was up on another level, but because of the finance for it, I had to drop back down. And when I got into crowdfunding along with James Bone Crusher Smith out of Myrtle Beach, In fact, we got two programs going on. We also, he's building a museum, Emerald Beach, for boxing, and out of Woody, out of North Carolina. And what we need to do is take our radio show as we grow, move it to another level also as we progress. If we can get more people online, get Skype hook up where we can just call anywhere in the country, out of the country, really. And that's why I got in it, to move it where we can go across the water and bring my radio show to another level. And I did mention it to Ida. She might have forgot, but I done mentioned it to him. But
yes, he did.
He comes on every Friday night at 9 o'clock with the Bone Crusher.
Well, I'm excited about the opportunity because I lived in Detroit for almost a year, and the gentleman that he talks about in the video that made $10 an hour and his car broke down and he didn't have the money to repair it and he didn't have the money to buy another one. And the people on his job got together and did a community crowdfunding for him. They were only trying to raise $25,000. And the word of it hit the news, and they ended up raising almost $350,000 for this young man to get him a car and a house, and he was able to actually relocate out of the neighborhood, buy a house, and buy a car.
Yeah,
so
you'd be surprised
how community crowdfunding can really help. And I just want to see if Elder Clark is on the line now. Elder David Clark, are you with us, Elder Clark?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we can take the show to another level. We have the distinguished Elder David Lawrence Clark on the line with us, who is a social worker by education from Norfolk State University. But he's a distinguished therapist in his field. His work, he developed a program in music therapy for drug rehabilitation. And he's archived in the world-renowned Library of Medicine at the National Institute of Health. And he's very good friends with Dr. Smithy Incas, who was on this show just a couple of weeks ago. I met up with Elder Clark from the beginning of my campaign. In fact, when Dr. Smithy Incas had shared with him what we were doing in terms of surveying the environments for high radiation and retrofitting houses, she immediately called him and said, you gotta meet Dr. Lally. You need to work with her with your church campaign. Because, Elder Clark, the story about you is God deeply inspired you to be sensitive and to regard electrical safety in the pulpit years and years ago. When nobody was talking about it, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got interested in electrical safety in the church?
I'd just like to say thank you for allowing me the opportunity to appear on this blessed platform, program, community service. I thank God for all that he's done for me and thank him for allowing Dr. Smith Incas, Dr. Lally for coming into my life. It has certainly been a blessing. But in 1972, I was attending Norfolk State University and during the Thanksgiving holidays, my particular father, a pastor, he's now a bishop, But in 1972, the fall of 1972, my father was in the pulpit preaching under the anointing of God. And as he was preaching, he had the microphone in his left hand, and he preaching, moving, and got back in front, got back behind the pulpit, and fell out, dropped out. And it was it was a bad day at our particular church to see him fall out in that particular manner. And everybody stood up. All of the pastors and ministers was there, and they all stood up. And the mothers, they all ran to find out what was wrong or see him in that vulnerable state. And they all began to pray and give praises to God. And the more they prayed and gave praises to God, his face began to turn gray all over. And it was just a bad, bad experience. And then my mother broke through the crowd, and my mother laid hands on him, his wife, and God quickened his body. His hands went up, his eyes began to blink, and his complexion changed immediately, and it seems as if nothing had never happened. And we all rejoiced, and he had no idea what happened to him. Prior to this, he was, you know, healthy. Everything was moving forward in his particular manner. He wasn't suffering from a heart problem or a lung problem or no cancer, no mental issues. He was very healthy, and he advocated, preached that, you know, I wish above all things that you prosper and be in health even as thy soul prosper. So he was an advocate for health and safety. And at that time was when this health and safety initiative birthed in my heart. It was at that time, after that, I began to conduct an investigation. First of all, I asked him after it was over. Well, he was kind of moody. He didn't want to talk. You know, he wanted to quiet himself, and I guess reminisce on what happened in the service today, that day. But that's always the case. Every time he finished preaching, he likes to quiet himself and reminisce about the service and what he planned to do for the future. But this time, it was something that he couldn't explain. And so in my questioning, no, I'm fine. I just don't know what happened and how that could happen and what went wrong. And it was just one of those situations that he could not explain, I could not explain. The people around him who have been in ministry longer than him could not explain. The mothers of the church, the other pastors and elders, they could not explain it. And so at that time, it was something in the back of my mind. I couldn't get over it. What happened to my dad? Well, that was in 1972. But, you know, that following Sunday, he preached the same way. Seemed like he was on fire. Seemed like he was, everything was normal. He preached under the Holy Ghost. He had a revelation, and he was on target. And everything was normal, you know. But it wasn't normal with me. I was always had to pray about that the Lord will preserve and keep him as he preach and minister in that particular manner. But 10 years went past, and 1982, he was at the Salvation Army ministering to another group of people. And at that time, he went out again. I mean, it was different people up there, but he went out again. The ministers, everybody crowded him around, and everybody was praying and rebuking the adversary, rebuking the devil, and pleading the blood. And my dad was out gray, and my mother came and intervened again, and God touched him and raised him up again. Well, that night we were he was moody. He wasn't talking. He was reserved and quiet. Just couldn't explain what had happened. I mean, the last time he went to the doctor couldn't give no explanation of it. And like I said, in 72, he didn't have no heart issues. He didn't have no cancer, no lung issues, no mental issues. He didn't have no problems. And in 82, he didn't have any. But again, my investigation was still going on. At that time, I called the health department, and I explained, and they had no idea of anything like that in the, had ever happened. As far as they know, they had no records of pastors getting sick in the pulpit or whatever. So it was like, no, we don't have anything like that. You have to go search somewhere else. Well, you know, you call the CDC, you call NIOSH, you call these type of agencies in the 70s and in the 80s to get certain information, but they had no particular knowledge of what was going on. And then you get on the university level, and you know I was going to Norfolk State, and but I was out of Norfolk State at that time, but yet you know that universities are always doing research programs. Well, I couldn't find one at the time that was addressing what could be the reason why this was happening in the pulpit. So I, you know, searching around, and I ran across a book called Body Electric by Robert Beck. And after I glanced through that book, I discovered that every person has an electrical system, has a circuit, and I discovered that my father was being irradiated. He was experiencing non-electrocution. He was being standing there. He was so tired ministering and holding that mic. He was just being electrocuted, non-electrocution, experiencing that. And so that opened up my eye, that particular book. And then I had a chance to meet Robert Beck. And he kind of occurred things like this could happen, but he wasn't, he had never had any person to come up here and ask him, a minister to come up and ask, does things like this happen in the pulpit? So, I mean, this is like 20 years of going through something like this. And then I ran into the stories about Tesla and Edison and their contributions to the world and how they were able to bring electricity to all of the homes in America. And it became more fascinating and more fascinating, and it gave me some insight to explain what was happening. Well, you know, 1995, my dad had another experience preaching in the pulpit, going forth, and we had nothing ready. No one had been still researching this particular experience that he had. And so it was grievous to see that happen. But I used to, but in that time frame between 72 and 1995, you know, I had an opportunity to meet clergy on the national level and on the local level, and high-ranking clergy from the bishops, superintendents, and pastors, and everyone that I met almost, we get into a conversation about, do you know any pastors who have passed away or fell out in the pulpit dead? And they would always comment, yes, Dr. John died, and Dr. Paul died, and Dr. Peter passed out, and they all could relate to somebody who they knew who had passed away in the pulpit. And without no car, they had no idea what was happening. But I had an idea after I read Body Electric by Robert Beck. And so I began to, there are certain leaders who handle funerals for the for different denominations. And they take records, and you don't know if they were sick prior to that. You don't know if they were sick after that, but you know that something was going on and they passed away, and they have little records of it. But no one was taking it seriously, and no one was, the health department wasn't looking into this. The CDC, the World Health, the American Nurse Association, no one was investigating anything like this. And if you, you know, Google, you won't find too much data in this particular area, or research in this particular area. But things are changing now. And so I had the opportunity to fellowship with Dr. Smith Incus or Dr. Bianca or I can't think of her last name now, but and she introduced me to Dr. Rhoda Zeanalali, and as we fellowshipped, we began to come up with the same type of ideas and revelations, and she bounced so many things on me that really, you know, put me in the right direction and changed my thinking, and things began to happen. All the people, all the doctors that I had talked to in the past, well, you know, they didn't think it was that important, and they didn't think nothing to it. But when I met Dr. Rhoda Zeanalali, we connected, and we got serious, and the Lord began to reveal to her, and she shared those things with me, and what the Lord was dropping in my heart, I shared those things with her, and our lives began to change, and we recognized that we had an assignment, and that God was unfolding his revelation to us. You know, the Apostle Paul, God gave him the revelation to the church, and he was able to implement some of it. And I believe that God has given Dr. Rhoda Zeanalali the revelation to, and I believe her assignment is to save, bring health and safety to the leadership of the church and to the congregation. And so as we fellowship, it seemed as if she began to bring things, turn an intangible idea to a tangible idea. She made a lot of things possible, her inventions. And certainly it was a witty invention. And the Bible gives a lot of definition or insight of a witty of inventors generating a witty invention. And so eventually she developed the protocol and developed the technology that will prevent clergy from being irradiated, from being electrocuted, from dropping dead in the pulpit, from falling out in the pulpit, from falling out sick in the pulpit. And I'm so grateful and thankful that I had the opportunity to be in her presence when the Holy Ghost was revealing these revelations to her. But so it is the health and safety campaign is a necessity. And I believe that it's time for clergy to embrace the teachings, the research of scientists. especially those scientists who are involved in electromagnetic radiation initiative. For an example, Dr. Martin Blank of Columbia University represents over 170 scientists and who have done research in this area right now. And I would love to see Dr. Martin Blank, who had an appeal to the United Nations this year, and he appealed to Congress and other foreign countries about becoming more aware of the effect of electromagnetic fields. But another person who I admire is the Pope, Pope Francis, and his views on climate change. But I would love to see Martin Blank and Pope Francis, that scientist and that religious personality, icon, come together, discuss this particular problem, and cause and be responsible for bringing the religious community into this particular revelation. And I would like to see Dr. Alali on that same platform bringing in the solution. But anyway, I didn't mean to go that far off. But back to my experience has been I'm still in investigation. I'm still trying to bring religious leaders into place. It is time for them to embrace the research of scientists, especially environmental scientists who's studying electromagnetic fields, so that they can take precautionary measures to safeguard themselves from EMF exposure. So, Dr. Alali, the experience has been such a blessing to me, and I appreciate your commitment and your dedication, and to those who've been touched by her life and her actions, I believe that God will continue to bless you as you be a blessing to her, and as you let people know that there is something that they can do to protect themselves from the exposure of electromagnetic fields.
I appreciate. Thank you, Hutter Clark. You have been one of my staunch advocates through thick, thin, through hail, storm, wind, and rain, and I want to just take this opportunity to thank you publicly for your support. Elder Clark jump-started the Mutual Health Epicenter and the Eco 180 Healthy Smart Homes campaign because he gave me 30 years of his research on electromagnetics and their effects on health. When he first shared with me the concept that electricity could cause injury, I thought he had had too many glasses of wine and he was having visions of grandeur. But as I began to review the literature and saw that there was some validity to what he was trying to share with me, and I got serious about looking at electricity as a viable source of injury, I began to see that what he was saying was actually valid.
And he opened so many doors for us at the Food and Drug Administration. He was successful in getting us opportunities to speak there on several platforms as it relates to medical devices and their uses in the home and the conversion of radiation. And he was very influential in helping us to, when I had breast cancer, helping me to identify the naturopathic venues and practitioners that helped me. And he advocated, shared with me some information he had read from some naturopaths in Germany that women with breast cancer ought to eat sauerkraut. And he said, eat sauerkraut until you can get to the practitioner. And that's probably the reason why that the breast cancer was arrested and didn't become highly invasive and causing me to have a radical mastectomy. So I thank Elder Clark for being, for his advocacy. Also, he worked with us with the engineers as we investigated pool pits and the use of electronics in the pool pit and the wireless infrastructure in the pool pit, and made his recommendations in terms of how the pool pit should be remediated. He then lent his efforts to directing and chairing the National Pool Pit Safety Campaign and brought together parish nurses from across the nation. We convened there at the Columbia University Teachers College in New York City, where we presented the whole conceptual framework of how to evaluate a pool pit, how pastors should be evaluated in their wireless apparatuses for ministering, how their mics should be evaluated, what kind of grounding and insulative technology should be used. And now today that campaign is available for pastors, no matter what denomination you are, across the spectrum. We already have probably close to 30 churches who have had their pool pit retrofitted, and some churches have had the entire church retrofitted. And we're grateful for the vision that Elder Clark has got us. He was instrumental in getting us into the College of Bishops to present for both the Church of God in Christ as well as the Pentecostal assemblies. And it was very well received. We had one bishop invite us to a state conference. And believe it or not, we asked one question: how many people at that convention had someone in their immediate family, their mother, their sister, their daughter, that had breast cancer? And everybody in that conference stood up. And that bishop paid for everyone, it was like 247 people, to have a nanobio balancer. He said, Dr. Lally, give one to everybody in here. And it was just so tremendous. So, Elder Clark, you have really started a tidal wave of events. Elder Clark is also a self-trained technology guru, and he follows technology competitions globally. And he was the one very instrumental in coaching us for the Impex Gold Medal. For 2 years, he coached us on how to engage that competition and how to go through. And we were so ecstatic when we took the gold medal. And it was all because of his ingenuity and how he prepared us for that competition. So he knows what he's talking about when he talked about the electricity, the evolution of electricity, how we've known from the beginning of time, from the late 1800s, that electricity was a culprit for our health, and it is today. And so we're so grateful now that the world is awakening, that the nation is awakening. We're so grateful. When I told him that, shared with him, we had a national call to action that recognized electricity as a source of injury, I had to tell him, please sit down and put a seatbelt on. And he was ecstatic with joy. So we're going to give the listening audience, we appreciate your patience. I just wanted to give him the opportunity to share the whole story of this movement that he was at the helm of 30 years ago when people thought he was crazy and he had been seeing too many UFOs and aliens. So if anybody has any questions, any want to ask Elder Clark, please press 1 to unmute your phone, and you can ask him at this time. Anybody have any questions? If not, I want to thank everybody for being on the call tonight. You've been fabulous. You can go to the links that I shared in the email blast and get information about this community crowdfunding. I'm excited about what's happening, and I'm excited to know so many of my friends in New York City, in Washington, D.C., and in Cleveland, Ohio. They're having a big community crowdfunding with Mark Hamill himself in Cleveland, Ohio, in 2 weeks. I felt so bad that I just left him in Palm Springs, California. He was there about 5 days before we got out there for our conference. But I'm excited about him and what he's doing in the community. Everyone have a good night. You can unmute your phone to say good night. Yes, sir.
I've got an announcement to make. If we're going to be in a health seminar on Saturday.
Okay. Hello, yes. Yes, seminar with Dr. Scott Whitaker. He's an author and a naturopathic physician. It's this Saturday coming, I think that's August 15th, from 9 until 1 o'clock at Orangeburg Calhoun Technical College. And we will also have the hand scanner there. For those who'd like to have their hands scanned at that time. So open to the public. And we invite everybody to come on out who can, and no family members in the area, send them on out.
We also have another engagement on the 27th at a woman's conference.
Okay, that's also in Orangeburg, but I don't have all of the details on that one yet, John. So
I just
we'll
putting
have
it out.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I have a brief announcement for those of you that are in Los Angeles. The Phoenix Awards with Reverend Al Sharpton are tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the evening, and we will be at the event. We are excited. We have a sponsor for. That's going to retrofit a community laboratory for senior citizens. So Los Angeles is getting ready to get their first biobalanced computer lab for adult education, and we're excited to have that opportunity. We will be able to network with Magic Johnson and a number of celebrities at the event. So we're excited that that will be a lift up for our national campaign and moving forward, and hopefully that we through the community crowdfunding, we'll be able to help finance a lot of the retrofitting of computer labs in high schools and schools, because now that Microsoft Office has launched their keyboard health safety warning campaign, in other words, they're putting a warning label on all keyboards and telling people keyboards cause serious disorders, health disorders. So you want to help get the word out. Everybody's going back to school. Make sure you are informing them about the nanobiobalancer and how it helps to block the absorption of radiation so they can get it on their children's tablets, cell phones, and other electronic devices.
Also, I'd like to invite everybody that's come on Friday night at 9 o'clock. Crowdfunding program.
All right, that's fabulous. Good night, everybody.
Okay, take care, Dr. A. Mario.
All right, Mario.
Take care. Bye.
Did anyone else have anything they wanted to say? Did you have any reports, Mario?
No, not this time.
Okay.
Maybe just a little comment about the speaker tonight. I used to work for a gentleman was my meteorological officer in Greenwood, Nova Scotia. And that was back in 1984, and he was aware of microwave, and the commander were thinking that he was crazy, you know, too. Because he was actually made a whole report on microwave transmission that was going to be going through the office, eh? And to the tower, eh? At that time. So that was 30 years ago, too. And today, you would say that this guy was ahead of his time, eh?
That's right.
So just like your story there, this guy, which was a base meteorological officer, as he was retiring, people thinking, well, it's about time he retired, he's going crazy, eh? But
wow.
It wasn't the case.
Well, thank you for sharing, Mario, and appreciate you being on the line tonight to share that point and keep it informed. And we're excited about the community crowdfunding and getting the network there in Canada so that we can help to get your project financed up there. Because you are doing a great work up there with the farm, and we want to be able to help a number of farmers get on board and push your initiative up there, because you've really been wonderful in helping us with these platforms and trying to get everything pushed out.
All right. Thanks.
Anybody else want to share before we go? If not, then I'll say good night to everyone, and I look forward. Now, next week, I'm going to be on travel, so I won't be on the radio show next week, but we look forward to the week after, and I hope to have a wonderful praise report for everybody. So I'll say good night.
Good night. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.